plan is to take my talents to the steel curtain, man. To the terrible towel.
That's Patrick Peterson on his looming arrival in Pittsburgh. While most Steelers fans have their eyes on what the franchise is doing in free agency at cornerback, I'm more interested in what they're doing at inside linebacker, or perhaps better said, what they haven't done at inside linebacker. I am Tim Benz. This is the Pittsburgh CityCast, and it's brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the app today or go online to BetRivers.com. Bet now from anywhere. A full NCAA tournament gambling preview is coming up with Anthony Jaskulski in just a little bit. He's from Steel City Insider. He's great when it comes to the mid-majors and the small conference college basketball schools, which is nice insight to have as we get set to study the lines for the first round of the NCAA tournament starting, well, tonight for the play-in games, the first four games in Dayton, including the one featuring Pitt and Mississippi State. But let's start with the Steelers. On day one of the legal tampering period yesterday, the Steelers decided to let cornerback Cam Sutton go to the Detroit Lions instead of matching or exceeding their three-year, $33 million offer, $22.5 million in guarantees, by the way. Instead, General Manager Omar Khan went with an older, cheaper, short-term option in eight-time Pro Bowler Patrick Peterson, 32 years old, most recently of the Minnesota Vikings. The deal is reportedly 1 year, $7.1 million, club option for 2024. Normally, the Steelers are inclined to keep their younger, homegrown free agents as opposed to signing players from other teams, especially vets. But acquiring Peterson while allowing Sutton to bail is justifiable given Peterson's resume and for a lower cap hit and for lesser exposure on the back end of the contract. What I find more curious than that is the Steelers' lack of movement on the inside linebacker front. That's despite a glaring need of the position and a glut of worthy free agent candidates moving at prices that aren't breaking the banks of other teams. All right, maybe not Tremaine Edmonds, $50 million guaranteed to the Chicago Bears to leave the Bills, but what about the other linebacker the Bears signed, TJ Edwards? He looked like he could have been a great fit here in Pittsburgh for what the Steelers needed at that position. A former Eagle goes to Chicago for just $6.5 million per year over three seasons, $12 million guaranteed. The market projection for Edwards was $47 million over 4 years at just under $12 million a pop. That signing is being lauded in Chicago as a steal. According to Pro Football Focus, he was the sixth best linebacker overall and ninth best in coverage. Those coverage skills at the position are qualities the Steelers have lacked since Ryan Shazier was forced into retirement due to his injury in 2017. And at 26 years old, Edwards may just be entering his prime. That's normally the kind of free agent the Steelers love to sign, a young player who may have been squeezed off another team's roster due to cap constraints or depth chart crowding or scheme fit issues. And Edwards has been linked to Pittsburgh a few times by national media outlets in the run-up to free agency. People were calling him a perfect fit for the black and gold, and I agree. Maybe Khan had no shot because Edwards was willing to work for cheaper to play closer to his hometown in Illinois and go to Chicago, but this strikes me as a player that could have been bought out of his hometown loyalties without the Steelers having to break the bank to do it against their salary cap. Other potential linebackers of similar skill sets who would have been good for the Steelers are heading elsewhere as well, or they're staying with their original teams. Look at David Long. He went to Miami for just 2 years and $11 million. As I saw in Sports Illustrated, Long was projected to get nearly $10 million per season or more, and he goes for two and 11 total. SI expressed surprise that the Titans didn't retain him at that price. Allow me to express surprise that the Steelers didn't offer more than that price. And if they did, and Long still said no, well, then that's a problem, and they have to figure out why. Alex Anzalone, he's staying in Detroit, according to Ian Rappaport, $6.25 million per year, 18.75 overall, three-year deal. Guy is 28, coming off his best pro season. Even if the Steelers wanted to replicate a veteran option short-term deal as they did with Peterson, there are guys available, but Bobby Wagner seems to be linked to the Seahawks, and Cowboys. Eric Kendricks appears destined for the Chargers. And Levante David may stay in Tampa Bay or go to Buffalo or Las Vegas. I'm not going to get the Steelers in trouble for something they haven't done yet. It's not as if the team is definitely entering the draft with inside linebacker still a gaping hole in the roster. A move can still be made. But quality players at the position are going elsewhere at manageable cap figures. And that's puzzling to me, especially since the team has so many other needs to address, and this draft is said to be only marginal in depth at that position. Unless the team really wants to retain Robert Spillane and or Devin Bush as pieces with Miles Jack and Mark Robinson, then Kahn and Mike Tomlin need to find some help. And frankly, if they have that much faith in Mark Robinson now, then they should have been playing him earlier last year. I'm used to seeing the Steelers lay back on the first day of big market NFL free agency. I'm not used to seeing them let good deals get away. Like, for instance, James Daniels last year, if you want some low-hanging fruit from 2022. All right, the Steelers are at plus 6,000 to win the Super Bowl at Bet Rivers with the likes of Carolina and Seattle. Ugh, behind the Raiders and Bears at plus 5,000. Wow, just in front of the Falcons and Commanders. What does that tell you? At plus 600, they have the longest odds to win the AFC North by a significant margin. The Browns are plus 350, the Ravens plus 275, and the Bengals are plus 110. All right, on to the NCAA tournament. Jay Wright won two national championships with Villanova. He went to four Final Fours with the Wildcats. He's now retired. He's now a studio analyst at CBS. He'll be part of the coverage for March Madness over the next few weeks. He did a conference call with college basketball media members yesterday. I was on it, and I asked him about Pitt, Penn State, and West Virginia. The Panthers play tonight to help open up the tournament in the first four games in Dayton. They're the second game tonight starting at 9 o'clock against Mississippi State. The Bulldogs come in as favorites, minus 3 points right now, last time I checked. And Jay Wright started by talking about Pitt and not only analyzing the game against the Bulldogs when I asked him to assess the hopes of the local teams in the tournament this week, but he had a lot to say initially about the job that Jeff Capel did to get the Panthers into the tournament and at least to Dayton in the first place for the first time since 2016. That was Jamie Dixon's last year and the last time the Panthers were in the NCAA tournament.
Jeff Capel, what he's done this year is incredible. Putting together that many new players, older players, getting them to play the level they did in the ACC is incredible to me, but it shows you really what coaching is now. I would struggle putting that many new guys together and getting them to play at the level that he did, and I think he did an amazing job. That Mississippi State team, I did a game this year when they played Mississippi. They are one of the best defensive teams in the country. I kind of compare them to TCU. That is a tough physical team. Pitt offensively, I think, is a lot better. Mississippi State defensively is a lot better. That's going to be a matter. If Pitt can hit threes, they can get them. But if Mississippi State goes on the lockdown, which they are capable of doing, that could be a really tough matchup for Pitt.
To Wright's point, Pitt made 9 3-pointers per game this year, a little over that actually, 9.2. That was the second most per game in the ACC. 76.1 points per game, the fifth best in the conference. There's the offense from Pitt that Wright was talking about. The defense from Mississippi State, the Bulldogs allowed just 61 points per game this year, second best in the SEC. 65.9 points per game on offense, the second worst in the conference. So I kind of like the under. And without Federico potentially due to that knee, I'm not going to take Pitt to win. Maybe I take him to cover. If you're going to give me points in an NCAA tournament game, I'll take the points. Perhaps I'll tease it up to get it over one full possession, but I'm certainly not picking Pitt to win outright, and I'm going to need the points if I'm going to pick the Panthers. Now, speaking of teams willing to grind it out like Mississippi State, Wright says that's what we should expect when Bob Huggins and WVU take on Kevin Willard's Maryland Terrapins.
Incredibly physical matchup here in the first round between them and Maryland, which is almost a local team. Those two guys know each other really well, but both of them are great defensive teams. That could be like a 54-55 game. But the team that comes out of that thing alive has the chance of advancing.
That may be true from Maryland's standpoint. The Terps only yielded 63.2 points per game, fourth best in the Big Ten this year. However, the average score of a WVU game this year was 76-71 in favor of the Mountaineers, and Maryland averaged 70.4 points per game. So perhaps that one a little bit more of a potential for scoring output than what Wright is predicting. I might go over there. I think last time I checked, it was an over-under of 137.5. If it stays around there, I'm going to go with the over because I think a lot of people are going to lean in Wright's direction in terms of the analysis. Yeah, actually, it's already up to 138. So give me the under in West Virginia and Maryland. I'll leave the two-point spread alone with Maryland as a two-point underdog. Penn State, Texas A&M. Wright says that game should be close the whole way.
Because of the seeding rules, they are probably where they have to be with seeding, but both of them are teams that could be four seeds. They're two great teams. I picked that as my best game in the first round. Just two really talented teams that could both advance.
Yeah, Penn State is a 10 seed. Texas A&M is a 7 seed. I'm going to lean towards the Nittany Lions here. I think you're seeing a team that's peaking at the right time. They're getting 2.5. And if you're giving me 2.5, I'll take 2.5 in that one. The winner gets the Midwest region's number 2 team. That's Texas, who plays Colgate. I'm presuming they would get Texas. I think the Longhorns will beat Colgate, but I think Colgate, if they got just about any other 2 seed, or if they were a 3 playing a 14, would give whoever they play a lot more trouble than they will the Longhorns. I think the Longhorns are the best 2 on the board. Colgate might be the best 15 on the board. The spread is 13.5. If you're given the points, I'll take the points for Colgate in the game. But I think Texas does win this matchup and very well may advance to the Final Four against Kansas again, maybe. I like them all the way to at least the Elite Eight, and then potentially to the Final Four. Let's see how Marcus Sasser is doing for Houston by that point, if the Cougars are still alive. They were my preseason pick to win the whole thing. They're a 1 seed right now. I felt great about them all year long, but now with the Sasser injury and the way they were blown out by Memphis in that championship game, made me feel a little shaky about the Cougars moving forward. Okay, let's hear more about the first round of the NCAA from Anthony Jaskolski, Pittsburgh Sports Express. He's excellent when it comes to the mid-majors and small conference teams, how they perform against the spread, and what he thinks you can expect from those clubs playing some of the Power 5 and Power 6 schools. Here's Anthony Jaskolski on the Pittsburgh CityCast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. All right, Anthony, as we have brought you on in the past, you are everybody's favorite gambling expert when it comes to picking out the winners from small college conference basketball. I kind of followed your path this year. Actually, it's been 3 years in a row now where I've really cleaned up when it comes to these small conference college basketball tournaments, the mid-majors. Just going with the favorites, parlaying a couple together on money lines. It cleaned up for me during the course of this past week. Now it's time for the big tournament. Now it's time to see what these teams do once they get into the field of 64. Are there any that you particularly love that you think are going to make noise, at the very least, that people can count on to cover some spreads?
Well, Tim, first off, man, when it comes to chalk, I'm no bueno on that. That's only in soccer for me, do I take chalk. When it comes to the tournament, when it comes to college hoops and the conference tournaments or regular season, it's always the underdog with me.
Point spreads, yeah. There was a lot of point spreads that blew up, even on favorites. What I was hunting during the course of college championship week was picking the 1s and 2 seeds to at least get to the final, parlaying them with each other, and I had a lot of success there.
Yeah, I can respect that. Thank God you stayed away from the Ohio Valley. I think SEMO was an 8 seed.
Yeah, them I did not go with.
You picked your spots. That's what it's all about, Tim. I say that all the time. Those three words are key. But, you know, there's so much gray area with it, you know? Pick your spots.
But like Lowell, Merrimack, Vermont, schools like that. Oh, you know, your school, Oral Roberts, is always good for a couple bets. You know, definitely going hard with St. Mary's and Gonzaga till they played each other. You know, plays like that made me a lot of money over championship week.
Well, you know what? Oral Roberts, man, if you would have just they ended the season on a 15-game win streak, I'm pretty sure. If you would have just kept because they obviously they didn't cover a lot of those games. I know North Dakota took them down to the wire a couple times. But if you just money-lined them and kept rolling that over and over and over again, double down, triple down, I can't imagine what you would have walked away from.
Colgate was a good one in the Patriot League. Iona with Patino, why not?
Why not?
I went with them on a couple of occasions. Grand Canyon. These are the schools now that have carried over into the big dance. One of them that I like from the MAC is Kent State, who blew me up when I actually decided to go on a one versus two bet, and I took Toledo. I rode Toledo hard all the way through the MAC, and then Kent State got him in the final. What do you think of their chances? I think they got some good players. I followed Sincere Carey since he was at Duquesne. Do you think they got a shot to advance out from a 13 seed?
Tim, they're one of my favorite picks. They're going against Indiana, and Indiana's been so shaky late. I think if we go back a couple weeks ago to the Iowa game, where Iowa just came into Freedom Hall and just steamrolled them. Now, Iowa was successful from three, but they really exposed a lot of cracks in the ceiling of Indiana. You know, what we thought was impenetrable for a while, because, I mean, there's a lot of elite class talent on that team. And they outmatched, obviously, they outmatch Iowa almost in every category, but we saw, you know, sometimes it takes a team to move a mountain, and that's what's happening with them. And they're really on the downward slope right now. And they're going against the Kent State team. Like you said, Sincere Carey, he might be the best player on the floor. He had 26 points. He was on fire from three from everywhere on the floor against Toledo. There was just no chance. Toledo just had no chance. The same with Milner. You know, he's their big forward, big stocky forward, but he's got range. You know, he could handle the ball.
The word is out in this line, though, because it's only a 4-point spread.
It is. It's going down big time. But if you think about that, if you look at it, more money's going towards Indiana right now. See, there's a lot of bettors out there that love to do the money line plays. You know, you're talking about the conference tournament money lines. Well, everybody likes to do those chalky parlays in the tournament, and I highly stay away from that. That is a huge red flag, because one of those teams are going to disrupt that parlay, no matter who you have in it. It's just going to happen. If you put four teams in there, and, you know, either Indiana's one of them, Duke's one of them, someone's going to fail you. And that moves the line, you know. Even money lines will move the point spread itself if there's enough money going in.
Do you feel that way about the ones and twos this year? Is there a one or two that's going to go down? Like, is Marquette in danger against Vermont? That one smells a little fishy to me.
Well, yeah, look at that line. You know, I was tweeting about that last night. I mean, the last time I seen a line where it was 11 or less was Kansas versus New Mexico. That was 2015. And or New Mexico State, excuse me.
Are you talking about a 215 line?
A 215 line. And Kansas blew the doors off of New Mexico State. That was a 75-56 final. That spread closed at 9.5. But aside from that, I mean, you got to go back to the Lehigh upset of Duke to find a line that was that low when a 15 actually upset it to. So that's 2012. That was an 11-point spread right there. Sometimes you got to watch out for those, Tim, because it's a trendy spread right now. And we're seeing the same thing with Princeton. What are they at, 13.5 right now against Arizona?
I believe that went up. I was just looking at that. I was actually thinking about that game a little bit because I watched Princeton and Yale. It's actually up to 14.5.
Oh, okay, so it's moving.
Yale got a lot of respect during the regular season, and I think rightfully so. I think Yale was the better team. Princeton had the better day, the better tournament. Short as it was in the Ivy, they were playing at home. So I think this was not a great representation of who was the better Ivy League team. I think if Yale gets in, they're probably a 13 or a 12. I believe that's why the line is moving up in favor of Arizona. I don't think this is a great addition of Princeton. We've seen better Princeton teams in the tournament before. I like Arizona. I'm not too worried about that. If we're looking 215s, I'm not worried about UCLA. If, you know, to your point, Anthony, about teams that are thrown together in big parlays, if people are throwing together the ones and twos, UCLA doesn't scare me there. Getting upset. Arizona doesn't scare me there, getting upset. I think the bigger concerns are Vermont taking out Marquette and Colgate maybe surprising Texas, not because of Texas, but because of Colgate. I think Colgate's better than a 15. I think Texas is very well seated as a 2. I think they're the best 2. In fact, I wouldn't be stunned if they won the whole thing. So I think Texas advances, but Colgate against a lesser 2, I think, could have surprised somebody and maybe even won if they were a 14.
Wow, man. You and I are complete polar opposites on this, because my 2 potential upsets, and I don't think it's going to happen. We're talking, this would be the 3rd straight year that we had a 15 over a 2. And, I mean, you'd have to go all the way back to MTSU upset Michigan State to find the next one. Again, the Oral Roberts and Ohio State one, you kind of have to scratch that out, because that was at Mackey Arena. There was hardly anyone in the crowd because of COVID. It was a completely different atmosphere. That really favored an underdog in that situation. That's why so many underdogs really hit in 2020 or 2021. But last year, I thought that was a complete anomaly with St. Peter's. I don't know how the hell that happened. You go put that into a model 1,000 times, it has to come back 999 times Kentucky wins that game. But if I had to take a 15 over a 2, Tim, I'm either going with Asheville, and that's because not so much Asheville, and they do have one of the best point guards in the country right now, but more along the lines of UCLA and a more bare cover without Jalen Clark out there. I mean, we talk about Jaime Jaquez, you know, we talk about Tiger Campbell, but the glue, the main glue to that UCLA team, defensively especially, is Jalen Clark. And we know Mick Cronin, at the end of the day, that's a defensive mind. And that guy really, I mean, if you want to say the point of the defense, that's what he was running. It's going to be real interesting to me, because they struggled in that Pac-12 tournament, even though they got to the final. But, you know, I think me, you, and 3 other guys could get to the Pac-12 tournament final this year. That's how bad it was. But they struggled with Colorado. They struggled the second round. Arizona kind of exposed them in the second half. If Asheville gets up early on them, because they can score. And Asheville knows how to come back, too, even if they get down early. That team knows how to climb back. I mean, they were down by 18 to Campbell in the Big South tournament. But that didn't bother them. I mean, they clawed back with no issue at all. Them, I'm watching, and on the flip side of that, I'm very suspect on Arizona.
You're not sold on the Pac-12 at all.
I just can't be. It's so inconsistent. It really is. Arizona.
Do you like the spread? So it sounds like to me you like the spread of Asheville at plus 17.5 against UCLA.
Without question. And I also like the spread with Princeton. I think Princeton's going to get up early on you. I mean, they get up early on everybody. The problem is they don't know how to hold on to a lead. I mean, hell, they were up 12-0 on Yale in the in their tournament final. They just don't know how to hang on to that lead. That's their problem. They're a turnover machine.
How about a look at Oral Roberts? Oral Roberts is your team. I believe that you were the chancellor for a short time there, as I recall.
I was.
What about their chances against Duke? Do you like them against Duke? I mean, look at the ACC. You say you don't like the Pac-12. What do you think of the ACC? And is your team good enough to upset Duke, or has Duke found something with their charge through the tournament? The spread is 6 right now.
Yeah. What I like about that, and they set that line high on purpose because they want you to think that, you know, Duke's back in business. John Shire's got them in the right gear. They obviously won the ACC title. They cut down the nets in Greensboro. So that's got to say something, right? We got to be scared of the big, bad Blue Devils. But I think everybody's focused on the wrong blue blood here. It's going to be Kentucky that makes that run. It's not going to be Duke. I don't know if Duke bows out to Oral Roberts, because the issue with Oral Roberts is when they beat Ohio State, when they beat Florida, and they should have beat Arkansas, Kevin O'Banner was kind of the glue guy for that team. He's the one who transferred. He was the forward that was hitting all those threes,
yeah,
pulling all those
Texas
rebounds.
Texas Tech,
out.
Right?
He went over to Texas Tech, and that was a bad move for him, and it was a bad move for Oral Roberts. They should have never broke up. They do have Vanover, this big, tall, lanky drink of water, but the problem with him is, you know, for 7 foot, he's a transfer from Arkansas. For 7 foot, this guy just stands out on the – he camps out on the three-point line all the time. They don't play defense. They can't rebound the ball. They just rely on outscoring you all the time. If I was going to take anything on that Duke and Oral Roberts game, it's the total. I would take over, and I think where are we at, the high 140s right now on that?
145. Oh, sorry. Oh. No, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Let me back up there. That's my mistake.
It's 145.
You had me looking at Kentucky. That one also was 145.
So, Oral Roberts and Duke, I'm taking over even if it gets up to 150. I think that game's just going to be. And I don't think I would take Oral Roberts with plus six. I don't know if they're going to win that game. I want them to. At Max A. Smith, he. Midcourt Max, it came to know 2 years ago. That guy shows up for the big games, and he belongs in the NBA with that kind of sharpshooting skills, and he can really drive the lane. Duke's going to have just a miserable time guarding him, but I really think Duke might sneak away from this one. I don't think they're covering six.
Sounds like you're bullish on Kentucky. They're plus 900 to win the East. Do you like that?
I love it. Absolutely love it. That is a team that's clicking into the right gear right now. I love the way they close out games. They are one of the best free throw shooting teams right now. I don't know if it shows that in statistics, but over the last 9 games, I don't think I've seen them miss one yet. They are just, it's, you know what? It's pinnacle Coach Cal ball right now. That's what they're playing. They're thriving on defense. They're thriving on rebounds. Oscar Tshiebwe is just a freaking monster underneath. And I mean, he's just getting better and better. But they're doing what Coach Cal teams do, and that's close out games physically. That's what they're doing. And, plus 900? Oh, man, that's a good number, Tim. That's a good number.
I had Houston a while ago on a futures to win the championship. This is going into the conference tournaments. Actually, sometime in February, I think I got them. They're plus 550 right now. They've got the most narrow odds of anyone. But with Sasser's injury, I don't feel great about it. Is there a team on the board right now where their betting line is that you think is a sweet spot to get in? Like Alabama's plus 700. Kansas is plus 900. You said you don't like UCLA. Purdue's at plus 1,100. Texas is plus 1,300. Any of those jump out at you? You brought up Kentucky before. Where's Kentucky? Plus 4,500 to win the whole thing if you really like them that much. Any of those odds pique your curiosity? Gonzaga plus 1,600?
Before I get into that, Tim, that's one of my upsets there for you, okay? We've only had one 16 over one, but if we don't have Marcus Sasser out there, was it a hamstring injury that he's suffering with
groin,
right now?
Groin.
If we don't see him out there, because you just knew Memphis was going to lay waste to that team. Their cupboard's bare, man. When Marcus Sasser, he runs everything for that team. I mean, that's not a team where they can just, you know, Kelvin Sampson can say, all right, you come off the bench, let's go. It's not like that. It might have been 2 years ago for them, but this is not the same team. I'm looking at Northern Kentucky to give that team hell right off the bat.
They're at plus 19 and a half right now, so you like them on that number, huh?
Listen, Northern Kentucky's one of the toughest 16 seeds I've seen. Marquise Warrick, that is the player of the year in the Horizon League. He shoots lights out, 19 points a game. They got rebounders, man. Chris Brandon leads the road with that. Sam Vincent coming off the bench. And, you know, the guy who was supposed to be their all-around best player, Trevion Faulkner, has kind of, you know, hit a lull. So if this guy catches on, this is a triple-headed monster between Vincent, Faulkner, and Warwick that, I mean, at least could win the first half. You know, I'm talking money line on the first 20 minutes. But you're going to be – you know how you always look at that score, Tim? You always focused on like an 8-9 game or something, and then you peek up in the corner in the top right, and you're like, oh, my God, that 16th seed's still giving them hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
You're like, all right, when's it going to snap into gear? When's it going to go from 16-16 to 38-18, you know? But with Northern Kentucky, I think that, oh, man, I don't want to say it's going to be a 16 over a 1, but this is as close as I could see one happening.
All right, Anthony.
I don't think Houston's going to escape that.
All right, Anthony, let's wrap up with this. We haven't talked about the local teams yet. Let's do that. Pitt, Penn State, West Virginia. West Virginia is a 2-point dog against Maryland. Penn State's a 2.5-point dog against Texas A&M. Pitt is a 3-point dog against Mississippi State tonight. And by the way, I think I misspoke before. West Virginia is a 2-point favorite, not a 2-point dog in that one. Do any of them win? Do any of them cover?
I don't like Pitt tonight. I think that Mississippi State can absolutely smother you. Everybody keeps trashing them for how bad they are offensively, and they're not that good. I mean, but listen, you know, you can't just put stats in a vacuum and say this is what it is. I mean, it all depends on the game. It all depends on what you're looking at. And Pitt doesn't really defend the three all that well. They're going to leave shooters open for Mississippi State. They're probably going to run some zone against them. I would. But at the end of the day, Mississippi State, they want to play football against you. And, I mean, they're gonna make you bleed. And I don't think Pitt's ready for that. I think Pitt is already a team that looks tired right now. I think that was pretty evident on the absolute whooping that Duke gave them. So I like Mississippi State. You know, West Virginia, I just don't know much about them. They're so Jekyll and Hyde, that team.
You know, like Jay Maryland. Wright was trying to talk. I did an interview with Jay Wright. He was trying to talk me into this being a really low scoring game between these two. And maybe that's the case with Maryland's defense. But, you know, the average score of a West Virginia game is about 145 points. There's 70. Like they score 70 something. They allow 70 something every night.
They're an interesting team, man. They got, I mean, it feels like they can beat anybody on any night and they can lose to anybody on any night. And then that's
like the over under on that one is 137. I kind of like the over in that one.
Take the over, and I like Maryland in that one. I hate to say that, but I like Maryland. And you know what? If we're looking at all the local teams, I'm going to say the Holy Trinity is going to lose here. I think Penn State's going to bow out too. I mean, I like what Penn State did in that Big Ten tournament, but man, that you imagine how much that took out of them. And to get back to your earlier question, Tim, I'm taking Jamie Dixon to go to the Final Four this year. I like TCU. Yes.
Wow. Now that would be a big plus. So you like 2-6 seeds then. They're a 6 seed as well, just like Kentucky, aren't they?
Yep. I'm gonna back both and hope that one gets there. That's the idea, you know? You want two horses in this race and just hope that you get one to the finish line. TCU scores, man. Who would have knew, right? He's the Jamie Dixon's running the antithesis of what he did at Pitt.
So TCU is at plus 1,000 to win the region.
Yeah.
And they are at, let's see if I can find it here. I got to go down a little bit here. TCU is at plus 3,500 to win the whole thing.
Hey, they're deep. All things can be done through Mike Miles, who's their guard. He's their do-it-all guard. They score, they score, they score, and they still have a little bit of that. They chipped a little bit of paint off of the old barn that Jamie ran over here at Pitt with rebounding. They can rebound the ball. I think, you know what, Tim, that's what it's all about. It's not necessarily, what do we always say about the tournament, right? It's not necessarily the best team. It's the team that's the most on fire. It's the team that catches, you know, fire. That finds a streak, that finds a hot goalie, if you will. That's what it's like in the tournament. It's not necessarily the best team is going to win that. And I don't think TCU is the best team in this region, but they're the ones that can easily catch, you know, they can catch the quickest of fires. And you know what, Tim? I'm going to give you one more real quick. Montana State, they are going to upset Kansas State, and it's not even going to be close.
So you're going to pick them outright, huh?
Outright, and I'm saying they're winning by double digits.
Wow. Wait, hold on. I jumped off of that. Now, hold on for a second. Montana State.
It's 8.5 right now.
People are catching on because now it's down to 8. For them to win, it's almost plus 295 right now to win outright.
Oh, that matchup is a disaster. The minute I saw that on paper, I was like, man, that's it. Kansas State just met their match. That's too much for them. That Montana State, you know what I'm talking about with Mississippi State? They are almost carbon copies of each other, where they just want to make you bleed. They kick and punch you for 40 minutes until you just can't breathe anymore. And Kansas State is not meant to be in that kind of game. That's way too physical of a game for that team.
Anthony, thanks. Steel City Insider, we'll check you out there, and we'll check in again sometime throughout the tournament, all right? Maybe before the Final Four.
Awesome, Tim.
All right, so my thanks to Anthony. I'll be in Columbus for the first round of the NCAA tournament and in New York for the Elite Eight. Looking forward to that, seeing NCAA basketball at Madison Square Garden. Before we go, hockey tonight. The Pens, they're taking on the Montreal Canadiens at PPG Paints Arena. A weird scheduling bugaboo here for the Pens. I don't know how else you describe it, where they get the Rangers and Flyers, two rivalry games within the Metro. And then they get a Tuesday night game against the Canadiens, and then they go to MSG for games on Thursday and Saturday, a day off in between two consecutive games on the road in New York. It's like a COVID schedule in a weird sort of way. Canadiens coming in at plus 120 on the puck line at a goal and a half, plus 295 to win. Over-under set at 6.5. I'd lean towards the under at plus 102. This could be a Pens come out flat kind of game, given the circumstances that I just outlined. I don't like the Pens at minus 360 unless you're teasing them, parlaying them with something else. I certainly look at the puck line and see 148. That feels more inviting at a goal and a half. But if you're getting plus money and you're getting a goal and a half, it might be best to take the Canadiens and see what happens if they get to overtime or something to that effect. All right, that'll do it for us here at the Pittsburgh CityCast. We'll be back next week to wrap up week one of the NCAA tournament. Look forward to the Sweet 16. Bet now from anywhere. Download the app today or go to BetRivers.com.
Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh CityCast on the Bet Rivers Network.